It is the March 23rd edition of the Windy City Podcast. Mark Carmen here, and my guy, Adam Hoag, who kind of is leaving me, but staying with me all at the same time, is joining us. Adam, I, of course, have worked at WGN Radio, and he just got the big bump up to NBC Sports Chicago. But you're still a contributor at WGN, right? We're still teammates, Adam Hoag?
Yeah, I'm still sticking around, talking Bears, White Sox, and yeah, it's a big new job, NBC Sports Chicago, and 2 days into the job, congratulations, there are no sports.
It's scary, though, right? Like, you just got this gig, but, like, what am I supposed to do, and how am I supposed to show you my value? You just hired me.
It is very bizarre. So I'm covering White Sox and Bears, and obviously, given the timing of it being March, you're focused on the White Sox season about to start. I was supposed to go to Arizona just a few days after starting the job to get a taste of spring training, and that trip quickly got canceled, which was good because 24 hours later, all the spring training was canceled. And now the only thing going is NFL free agency. So at least that's going on. So all of a sudden it's kind of business as usual for me covering Bears stuff. But yeah, it's just bizarre times right now, obviously in the entire world, but especially in the sports world, as we're watching reruns of Bulls Heat 1996, which I'm definitely not complaining about.
Did I not see a video of your young son, just who's a huge Jordan fan now? Because does he think Michael's actually playing games right in your face, like that's like live?
I'm starting to worry that maybe he doesn't understand that these games were played 24 years ago. hey, if he does think it's present time, I mean, he's living the dream that you and I lived, right? He doesn't have to know that right now the Bulls are not good at all, and he can just relive the glory days, which we're doing. But for him, it's like it's the first time it's happening.
I think it's harmless. I think it's great. And the best thing about the coronavirus is that old Bulls games are being played on NBC Sports Chicago. It literally makes my day. There's Ron Harper. There's Mike. There's Scotty. Oh, and there's Tim Hardaway having an incredible performance for the Heat right now. And I didn't even realize he had that game. I've been having the time of my life watching it.
Because it doesn't matter, because the Bulls are so good that one player's going off for the Heat and the Bulls are still up by 20, showing how dominant they are. And the depth, the guys coming off the bench, guys I game one, Dennis Rodman didn't even start.
That's weird.
You talk about the big three and Rodman wasn't even starting because I guess, Phil was worried about him, getting agitated early, and they figured that was going to be a strategy that Pat Riley and the Heat were using, which is probably correct. So he didn't want him to get in foul trouble early, so they started Tony Kukoc, and like as big of a Tony Kukoc fan as I was, like you forget how good he actually was. Like he was a legitimately good player,
no question. And if you go all the way out to '98, he was. In the 98 finals, he was the number two guy on that team. Like, Rodman had faded down. Mike was still hanging in there and hitting the game-winning shot in game six and all that and had a phenomenal series. But Tony was the most other consistent player. Scotty was hurt. Kukoc was a hell of a player. Doesn't get enough respect. I love that he hangs around here, too. Like, he's at the United Center all the time.
Yeah. Well, does he work for them?
He's got some...
I think he's like in charge of European scouting or something.
Is that right? Tony's? Now I got to look it up.
Why I think he has some big job like that.
Tony Kukoc Bulls. Job title. He's doing something.
I love him.
He's doing something over there. And what pops up here is the overlook star that is Tony Kukoc, Chicago Bulls. And I'm watching Pippen highlights. These guys were out of their mind. But hey, all right, Adam Hoag, let's talk a little Bears here. And I want to start at the top here because nothing mattered until they did something with the quarterback, and they've done something. Nick Foles is here, conditional fourth-round draft pick, competition for Mitch. I put out a piece at FanSided saying that this is like moving forward but still looking back. Like I feel like they're cutting ties, but they're they broke up with their girlfriend, but they're still going on dates for the next couple of weeks to see if they can work it out. Does that make sense?
Well, yeah, and I think the tricky thing is, like, if you were to go out, and obviously they showed some interest in Teddy Bridgewater. Teddy Bridgewater would have been a guy that he comes in, he's the starter. Like, it's not even a competition, really. You know, you're spending that much money. You're paying a guy not just for 1 year, but long-term three-year contract. That's a guy that you're acknowledging is taking over the job. I understand why the Bears might want to do that or had interest in doing that, but I'm not totally convinced yet that Teddy Bridgewater is that much better than Mitchell Trubisky. I mean, he certainly looked good in that five-game stretch. He went 5-0 and, you know, won at Soldier Field this past season. But the gap in what you were going to pay and commit to Teddy Bridgewater, to me, was way bigger than I'm actually convinced that he's that much better, you know, that much of an upgrade. So, and at the end of the day, they weren't willing to pay what the Panthers wanted to pay. And quite frankly, it was a better fit for him there going with Joe Brady. So I kept coming back to Nick Foles over the last couple months for a number of reasons. One being the tie-ins he has with his coaching staff, his relationship with Matt Nagy, going back to Bill Lazor, which was his best season with the Eagles back in 2012. Bill Lazor was there at that time. And then when he came in and won the Super Bowl and was Super Bowl MVP with the Eagles in his second stint, his quarterback's coach was John DeFilippo. So all those guys being on the Bears staff told me that, hey, if the Jaguars are willing to let this guy go, you do it. And there's all this talk about his crazy contract, and it is it was a regrettable contract for the Jaguars. Well, what people aren't realizing is that the bad part of that contract was mostly in the signing bonus, which doesn't come over to the Bears. So Jacksonville's bad contract does not mean that it's now Chicago's bad contract. Is it a pricey potential backup? Absolutely. But I choose to look at it more like a pricey insurance policy, which right now you need for Mitchell Trubisky, who I actually am in the camp of people who think it's not yet time to just totally cut ties with him. He had so many valid excuses last year and no help around him that I personally would like to see him have one more chance. Am I optimistic that it's all going to work out? Not necessarily, but I do want to see this guy in a real quarterback competition with a proven veteran who not only is a very good backup quarterback, Nick Foles now I'm talking about, but has shown you that he can come in on a winning team and win in the playoffs to the point where he was Super Bowl MVP. So to me, you add all that up, it makes perfect sense for the Bears right now, at least in 2020.
All right, so you sold me. I'm in. I'm on the Adam Hogue, Nick Foles. Mitchell Trubisky still has a shot to be good. Let's find out. And if not, you have a great insurance policy and he can step in and he knows the offense. So let's imagine that we have NFL training camp. I think it's a huge, huge if at this point. And stay safe out there, everybody. You know this, but just worth mentioning when we look to the future and everything that's going on with the coronavirus. But last year, I mean, Mitchell Trubisky hasn't played in the preseason. So are they going to actually put him out there and say, hey, you better go prove it out there in the four preseason games, or are they just going to determine it at training camp? That's an interesting part of this to me.
Yeah, I mean, to me, you have to play these guys more in the preseason. At this point, you probably have a better sense of security about what Nick Foles will be for you. He knows the offense. Now, he doesn't know it inside and out because things change, and it's been a while since he was necessarily with Matt Nagy, and he obviously expanded things. So there are still things for Nick Foles to learn, but for the most part, he's going to come in pretty comfortable. It's a good thing you bring up here, Carm, because that's the one thing I keep going back to last year, and that the Bears were convinced that Mitch was going to take the next step, because if there was any doubt in their minds, he would have played in the preseason, and he didn't. So there was definitely a misevaluation there about where Mitch was, and they were convinced that he got that level 202 that Matt Nagy talked about all year, and obviously he wasn't there. So look, I understand the risks of playing your starters in the preseason, but I think given where they're at now, you absolutely have to see it on the field. It can't just be in practice. I think Trubisky and Nick Foles, if this is a true competition, and whoever else is in there. By the way, I still think the Bears should draft a quarterback.
Me too.
That whole spiel I just went on about Nick Foles and how he makes sense right now in 2020, he doesn't necessarily make sense in the future. Like, if he ends up being the starter, then he's not going to be the starting quarterback for 10 years. If Mitch somehow figures it out and clicks, well, then maybe you sign him to a contract extension and in a perfect world it all works out long term. Probably not, but maybe. With Nick Foles, you know where he's at in his career. You know he's a great backup, average starter who can lift you up if everything's perfect around him. You still need to take another swing. You got to take another swing with a young quarterback. Those are the cheapest quarterbacks you can find. I don't know if it's in the second round or later, the fifth round, which is your next pick now after the second, but I would take another swing in the draft of the quarterback.
Yeah, and that's part of the reason why Jacksonville was able to make that trade, because they took a swing in the sixth round. They got Gardner Minshew. He shocked the hell out of everybody, and they were willing to roll the dice and move forward, which the Bears obviously could have done last year. They didn't. So you never know that's why you get paid the big money to be the scouts that you are, and Ryan Pace to make the decisions on draft day of picking a guy in the fourth, fifth, sixth round. And most times it's not going to work out, but sometimes it will. So I'm 100% on board. Draft a quarterback. Before you talk about Robert Quinn real quick here and Leonard Floyd, and I want to get your thoughts on Jimmy Graham to Adam Hogue. The concept that Mitch Trubisky needs competition, that one I don't quite get. Like, I feel Mitchell Trubisky is working his ass off. And Matt Nagy did say some things, though, about, like, that he really needs to understand the offense more and get in that film room, which makes me think, is he just sitting in the film room and is he, like, playing Sudoku in there? I don't know what he's doing. But I feel like he's in the room. So the whole thing that, like, well, this might kick Mitchell or Mitch into gear, like, I don't see that. Like, I feel like the guy's been working as hard as he can. Maybe he just hasn't had enough talent around, if you want to be optimistic, or the other side is that he's just not good enough. It's one of the two in my mind.
Yeah, you know, it's a fair point, because I don't necessarily think Mitch Trubisky is a guy who's not focusing or not putting the work in. Everything we've heard and seen, you know, on and off the record over the last 3 years, the one thing you can never complain about with Mitch is that he's a great teammate. He puts the work in. He's in there all the time. No one's ever questioned that. You know, he's a good leader, and his teammates really do genuinely love him. You know, there's no question about that, like there was under Jay Cutler, about his teammates love it. Luke loaded bat for him. So it's a fair point that you bring up, because that suggests that there's just a disconnect in the learning, right? It's not necessarily the effort that he's putting in or the work that he's putting in. It's just the arrows are pointing at him being a quarterback that it just doesn't click. The game doesn't slow down for him, and he doesn't read the coverages properly. He doesn't see the field properly. Now, that is a thing that can improve over time with experience, potentially. But to your point, I don't know that this is a situation where, oh, just because there's competition coming in, all of a sudden it's going to pressure Mitch into doing more work to figure out. I think he's doing the work. So I think it's a good point. Now, that's why I don't necessarily view it like that. I just view it as the Bears covering their bases, purchasing an expensive insurance policy, because they understand that this window, their competition window, is already getting dangerously close to shutting on the defensive side of the football. And Nick Foles is a guy that has shown that if he has the right pieces around him with a good defense, he can come in there and win you ball games. The problem is, and this kind of maybe transitions to the rest of the conversation, Carm, where are the rest of the upgrades? You know, Nick Foles, great, but ideally he's still your backup quarterback. Your next guy you brought in is Jimmy Graham, who's definitely on the downside of his career. Might be an upgrade over what you had last year at the tight end position, but he's not the difference between getting this whole thing on offense, which was disastrous last year, and making it suddenly work. Okay. Where are the upgrades to the running game? Nothing has happened there. What about the offensive line? Nothing has happened there. To me, that is very concerning right now.
Those are great points. And when Todd Gurley got released, I'm like, are you guys interested in that? And maybe he wanted to go back to Atlanta. I don't know. But, and he's also got some knee injuries, knee concerns is a better way of putting it, that might make you hesitate. But that was an interesting guy to have out there. And the dude is awesome as just a guy. I would have loved to have seen it. He would have been a breath of fresh air around here. But whatever. So yeah, they haven't. And I think the bigger one is the offensive line too. Look, it has to be addressed. How are they going to do it? Do it in the draft? Well, okay. That's a heavy lift, which makes me wonder, like, okay, you're going to have hopefully a healthy Akeem Hicks, which should get Khalil Mack, I would think, back to his level of productivity in 2018. Thank you. So to spend a bunch of dough on Robert Quinn when really anybody that you would put in that spot, minus Leonard Floyd, could be a very effective player. It just surprised me that they were willing to spend, you know, 5 years and $70 million, 30 guaranteed on Robert Quinn when you have so many other needs. Did you see it like that?
I guess my question wasn't so much on the micro level of Robert Quinn, who seems to have figured it out right now in his career. He is a proven pass rusher, and he's better. There's no question of getting after the quarterback. He's better than Leonard Floyd. The production is there. And I do think you plug him, Akeem Hicks, Khalil Mack all out there at the same time. That is very dangerous. So, I like it in that sense, especially. And I also want to point out, like, I don't think there's anything wrong with, if you're going to put your money in the quarterback and pass rusher, that's okay. Those are the money positions. So that's fine. To me, though, it was more so the bigger picture, which was not only was it Robert Quinn, but it was Jimmy Graham and also re-signing Danny Trevathan, which is a move I like. But when you put it all together and you zoom out, you're talking about three guys over 30. This is a shift from what Ryan Pace has done in the past, which was avoid guys that are getting close to 30, really on those third, fourth contracts, right? Focus guys that are going into their second contract and are a little bit younger, because once you hit that 30 mark, usually you always end up regretting it somewhere down the road with the money, because it's just how the NFL works. It's how football works. So especially when it comes to re-signing Danny Trevathan and then signing Robert Quinn, I don't hate those moves. I actually like those moves. But it is interesting when you zoom out and you just go, look, chances are, and you throw Jimmy Graham in there, there's going to be some regrets in there somewhere. And that cap room just keeps shrinking and shrinking and shrinking. And meanwhile, you haven't addressed the offensive line. You need another receiver. I still think you could probably use another tight end. I mean, there's other needs out there. And like, their solution right now is strong safety. It just goes to show you it's going to hurt you somewhere. Is
Jordan
a guy
Lucas.
No one's ever heard of? Yeah, a guy no one's ever heard of for a year and $1 million, and then bringing back Deion Bush, who's never really proven to be a starter. And meanwhile, who's your other corner? So I don't hate that they invest in the pass rush, but things aren't going to be as tight on the back end as it has been in recent years.
Challenging choices for Ryan Pace, who.
Yeah.
Let's just say for the record that whatever, it just goes sideways this year. Bears go 5-11. And I'm happy that we had football, by the way, and okay, they went 5-11. Do you see either Matt Nagy and or Ryan Pace in any level of trouble if they miss the playoffs and they're under 500?
You said 5-11?
Yep. Okay, how about 6? 5-11.
No, I think 5-11 would be really hard to swallow. And I also think there's too much talent on the team still. And if you ended up at 5-11, some things have gone severely wrong where you're questioning who's in charge then under that scenario, which is why I don't really think that's going to happen. I think what would be more likely is that they just missed the playoffs barely, like 8-8, 9-7. It doesn't go their way. Remember, you're getting the extra wild card this year.
That's so, yeah, good point.
You know, that could help them, salvage a playoff spot. But I think if you look back at last season and how poor the offense was really from start to finish, the job Matt Nagy did. Matt Nagy's getting a lot of criticism, and rightfully so, for offensive stuff. I like to split them into two people because I think Matt Nagy, the offensive coordinator, still has a lot to prove. But I think Matt Nagy, the head coach, actually has proven a ton. You know, he took a team in his first season to the playoffs and ended up being coach of the year. And then last year, yeah, things didn't go great. They didn't live up to expectations. But that locker room easily could have fallen apart, and it didn't. They even won 3 games in a row late in the year. You know, so I think that, and the fact that they even finished 8-8, not that I'm, you know, celebrating that, but I do think that given how the season was going, there are some signs there that the head coach knows what he's doing as a head coach. Offensively, he obviously has a lot to prove. So I would say it's very, very unlikely that Matt Nagy would end up being out after 3 years. Ryan Pace, though, if there was a disastrous 5-11 type season, I could see it happening. But I'm here to tell you, he's still very well liked in that building. He's very well respected in that building. And unless things completely fall apart, I would be surprised. But it does put the Bears in a tough position because I think there's only 1 year left on his contract then. And at that point, and I don't know that you could justify extending him.
Right. So like Trubisky goes south, yeah. You punt on Trubisky, and now you're sitting there. Do I allow the GM to continue on and whatever, bring in the next quarterback if for some reason that, well, it's not going to be Nick Foles forever. Bottom line, I asked the question, but I don't think any of them are going. I don't think they're going anywhere. It doesn't feel like there's any appetite for that at House Hall. Exactly what you said. Ryan Pace seems very well liked there. They like the head coach. They most definitely want him to do well. And if 5-11 was too tall, but to what you laid out, which I think is the fair bad season for the Bears, they just missed the playoffs. 7-9, 8-8, 9-7. It's not good enough. I don't think that you'll see any changes, which will upset my post game show host. Ed Obradovich, oh, yeah. And Dan Hampton. but I just wanted to get your take on that. Hey, Adam, before you go, how are you handling the coronavirus at home? You got the young son, you got the wife, you got yourself. And I guess you spend more time at home than maybe a lot of people because you're covering the Bears and you're out at House Hall, but you're home a bunch. But this is some different stuff right now.
Yeah, you know, I mean, real life stuff. Actually just a couple hours ago as we record this, just got the inevitable email I've actually been expecting for days from the school district saying that somebody that was at the school, actually the last day James was in school, did confirm as a confirmed case of COVID-19.
Oh,
so that's a little nerve-wracking. I think we all have our own like kind of opinion. I'm just kind of at the point, Carm, that I feel like we've all sort of been exposed to it, or you know, it seems to be well beyond the reach of what we actually know because there just hasn't been enough testing. And so I guess what I'm saying is I'm not surprised at all to get that email. And I just, you know, I hope that the exposure was limited. There's obviously no way of really knowing who came in contact with that person, blah, blah, blah. But yeah, it's a little nerve wracking because my son does have some, you know, some extra genetical issues he deals with, and his immune system can be somewhat compromised, but he's doing well. You know, he doesn't show any signs of being sick, and hopefully it stays that way. But all I can say to people is just, I guess, try to remain calm because I think more of that's going to happen where we all find out, you know, someone we know somewhere has been around somebody. It may even trace back to ourselves somehow, which is nerve wracking. But all we can do is stay in our own spaces, limit exposure, and make the best of this. I mean, there are some positives, you know, like I spent more time playing with my kid the last 4 or 5 days and probably haven't a long time. So just kind of cherish those moments because you kind of have to dig for them, Carm. But I mean, I think there are some positives that we can at least take out of it somehow.
If you're a dog, the coronavirus is the greatest thing that's ever happened.
Yeah.
right? Cats too, probably, although they're a little more quirky and they like their time alone. So they're like, why the hell are you on this bed when I'm normally sleeping here for 5 hours when you're gone? But yeah, and exactly right. Make the best of it. And judging by the videos that I see of James, he doesn't look like he's got anywhere close to any coronaviruses. The dude looks the happiest kid ever right now. Just running around like a straight lunatic, which is the way it should be. So it's a beautiful thing. Yeah, go ahead.
He's in heaven because, you know, he gets to be home and play all day and every day. No school today? Yay!
The other thing, too. Like, they're saying, like, this sucks for the kids. Dude, 10-year-old Carm would have been so damn excited that there's no school. Now, however, if you told me that camp was going to be canceled, then I'd be pissed. But if I was,
well, that might be coming.
Yeah, I think it is coming. I hope it's not, but the likelihood is that it probably is. Like 13-year-old Edgewood Junior High School Carm. Oh my God, this would be a godsend. I'd love to get out of there. Although now, if you got to 16, then I couldn't go to multiplex to see the Bulls practice. Now we're getting into a area that would be disappointing.
Yeah, but it is extremely challenging because obviously everybody's pretty much working at home now. Not everybody. I mean, even my wife she's going to work tomorrow because she is an occupational therapist and she works with older adults at a facility. Yeah. So, I mean,
wow.
She's definitely one of the people that, I anybody who's a nurse, doctor, obviously, but therapist, anybody, there's a lot of people right now that are still out there working and working with vulnerable people. So, definitely thinking about all those people. But in terms of being at home, you know, this has been a big challenge for parents because the best thing I think we can do with the kids is try to get them on some schedule. I know James's teacher has been amazing because she's been sending daily videos of her reading a story. So we can, you know, airplay that to the TV and it's kind of like his teacher's there reading, you know, stories to him. But try to keep him on schedule because at the same time, you know, I, like many other people, I'm sitting here with my laptop open trying to work and that's next to impossible when you have young children at home at the same time. So, it tests your sanity a little bit, but so I say, just stay calm, keep looking for positives. And try to keep the kid on a schedule. I think it'll go a long way.
Yeah, for real. Props to all the moms and dads out there who are different times for sure. Hey, Adam Ho, congrats on the gig again. Thrilled that you joined the podcast today. We appreciate it. And yeah, looking forward to talking some White Sox with you if and when we get baseball. Fingers crossed on that.
God, I hope we get baseball. You know, the only plus of this, Carm, one last point, is I have been begging for years now to shorten the baseball season because I think it'll actually be, I think it'll be more entertaining. Like, I'm somebody who I love 162 games. Like, give me as many games as possible, but I think the game's in somewhat of trouble. And I've been saying for years, you shorten this to 120 and you make it more of a sprint than a marathon. I think it's more exciting. I think more fans go to the ballpark. I think ratings go up. I think it'd be great. Now, unfortunately, I think we're going to end up with an extreme example where we're talking to 81 or less. And that's not any inside information. That's just me reading how this thing's going right now. So I think that's a little too short, but hopefully we have some baseball. And when it does come back, I can't wait to see what it looks like because I do think it could be a lot of fun to have like a sprint this year. I just hope it happens because obviously the White Sox have been gearing up for this year and it looks so exciting and so promising. So, got to get out there on the field at some point.
Yeah, that part of it, the White Sox ready to, we're just ready to see it, whatever it was going to be, whether it was 75 wins or 95 wins or anywhere in the middle, like let's go. I just don't know how they're going to do it. If we're just to throw my 2 cents in there, I could see it happening without fans. You get the testing and they're speeding along with that where you can get the test and you know in the same day. So basically you might be testing the players every single day and you all pass and you all can play. But to let people in to watch the games, I don't know how they're going to do it. You sit in seat one and you sit in seat five. Like, you can't do that. So I guess, but I don't think that baseball would, if you could get the players out there safely, I think you wouldn't punt on the season and you'd put it on TV because there's so much TV dollars to, you know, that's being spent. They need some revenue. So that's what that's how I see it happening this summer, which would suck, but would be better than nothing.
Well, and you hit on the key point there, though. We have to get the testing because people need to know. That's the hardest thing right now is that we don't know. Like, I was on a plane last week. I came home. I kind of had a cough. It's the kind of cough I would never, ever, ever, ever call the doctor about. But given everything going on, I did. And they actually asked me to come in. But I got there, and there's no test. And they said people who have showing all the symptoms that they've seen, they can't even get them tested. So that's a huge problem because the people, I could have been maybe one of the people that's walking around almost asymptomatic or asymptomatic and been contagious and not known it, right? So that's the problem that you're getting at here. If we can get everybody tested and they know if they have it or not, whether they're showing symptoms or not, then you immediately can identify who really needs to be self-isolating completely and who doesn't need to be. And then I think we can start getting back to a sense of normalcy at some point. But it just seems so far away right now, doesn't it?
It does. And I mean, just thinking back to my, your plane experience too, I was sitting there at Northwestern. I'm interviewing Derek Pardon at the half. Hey, Derek, what were you doing this season? Oh, I was playing overseas in Italy. Oh, really?
Yeah.
Yeah, I was lucky. I got on the last plane out. Now, I've shaken the guy's hand. He's, you know, I'm like, oh, my God. And I basically, in my own hypochondriac world, convinced myself that I had it. And I had no symptoms. Like, I get a bit of a headache. You know, but you start worrying about things and not knowing, that stuff can manifest itself. And all of a sudden, you feel like you're sick and you're not sick. So,
yeah.
My wife's telling me, you can't go to work. And I'm like, I don't have a fever. I don't have anything. There's no, you know, and it's not like if he didn't test positive, he was the healthiest guy I've ever seen. He was in a great mood. So, you know, and that's 3 weeks ago now. So I would like to think, knock on wood, that I was, you know, that he's fine, I'm fine. But I was texting Northwestern, like, hey, you hear anything about Derek Pardon? Like, relax, guy, you're fine. I'm like, okay, I'll stop bothering you, Gavin Skelly.
Yeah, but no, but that's fair because you just don't know. And like in my case, honestly, I didn't even really want to get tested because I knew there was a shortage and I'd much rather give it to somebody who's showing way more symptoms and in trouble. But in my specific case too, and I'm certainly not the only one that's having these same worries. Like I talked about earlier, I have a son at home that his immune system could be compromised. But even more important than that to me right now is my wife working as an occupational therapist and seeing older adults, you know? And
right,
it's like, what are you supposed to do? And I don't know. And exactly. Was I just kind of inventing a cough in my own mind just because I was paranoid like so many other people are right now? I don't know. It went away. Everybody seems fine. So it's just unfortunately, and I guarantee you a lot of people listening to this right now are having the same types of conversations at home.
For sure.
They don't know who they've come in contact with. They might have a slight cough. A lot of people like just have colds right now. It's still the end of winter. You know, a lot of people are just regular sick. And right now, if I had a cold, I would be completely paranoid.
Well, hopefully, at least as far as Chicago is concerned, and I don't think we're super ahead of the curve, but it doesn't feel like we're enormously behind as far as getting people indoors. So, I mean, I nobody knows what the numbers are going to be, and obviously they're going to go up, but I'm crossing my fingers that we're all doing our part here, and it won't get super, super ugly out there, but who knows what's going to be. It feels like, you know, we were speeding towards a stoplight and we looked up and we saw red and and jammed on the brakes and hopefully we stopped fast enough, but who the hell knows? Like that's how it feels to me.
I hope so. And yeah, just be safe out there. Please, please, please listen and don't put yourself in And I hear from the people too, like people I play basketball with, they're like trying to organize games outside because the gym's closed. It's like, no, stop. You have to stop. Just be smart, because this is the biggest thing. I saw this on Facebook today, and I think it's the best way to put it. The more you ignore these orders to stay home, the longer we're going to have to stay home.
Right. And
it's really that simple.
And also, like, when I keep on hearing, well, it doesn't really impact the young and as much, and I'll survive, and if I get it, yeah, okay, you might have a mild case, but I also see people who are, well, I'm a little bit older than you, but around my age, close to your age, whatever, and they describe it as an absolutely miserable experience with a fever of 103, and they're beyond tired, and they can barely function for an hour. Yeah, even if I get through that, I don't want that experience. I really, really don't. It sounds awful. And so, which is part of the current plan over here, Adam, I'm doing my vitamin A, my vitamin C, my vitamin D. I throw in my multivitamin. I got this oregano pill that I'm also taking, which is not weed, but what the vitamin shop told me to take. So, I mean, I'm eating as healthy as I can. I'm taking my vitamins. I'm trying to get my rest. I'm doing my, you know, it's trying to get some cardiovascular in there too. But you don't want to get this, man. You just don't. So be smart about yourself. Yeah. You know, take care of yourself. All right. Hey, thanks for being on, Adam Hoge. You're the man. Congrats on the new gig. Can't wait to see you on the screen, covering White Sox, covering Bears, and reading you. Of course, the first couple of pieces you put out have been phenomenal. Loved it. I was super impressed by the Nick Foles piece. You got that out in like 3 seconds. I'm like, did he know that Nick Foles was coming here for like a month? How the hell did he get that piece out so fast?
I had been talking about it for like 3 months.
You had a lot of information in there, dude. It was. I'm like, holy shit, this is impressive. Hoge is on his game, which is not surprising at all. But I was happy to read it. Like, this is good stuff.
Thanks, Carb. I appreciate it. Be well. Take care of yourself. Same to all your listeners.
You too, brother. All right, that is Adam Hoge. It's the Windy City Podcast. Stay safe out there, y'all. 17 seasons in the big leagues. He won 4 World Series. He's an 8-time All-Star. He's got one of the sweetest swings you'll ever see, and has done a whole lot in his life. Rode the roller coaster, and just great to be with Daryl Strawberry always. And Daryl, great to talk to you today. I know we're going to talk about, we might as well talk about the American Cancer Society and colon cancer right at the start here, because that's why you're here. And you know, I just to let you know, I mean, my mother passed away from colon cancer all the way back in 1987. I routinely get checked. So do my brothers. I know you're a cancer survivor. So this is something that, even in these crazy times, it's something we need to be thinking about.
Yeah, we do need to be thinking about it, Mark. And then, you know, and I'm condoled to you about your mom passing on that, you know, and I understand, you know, cancer, and, you know, my mom passed from cancer, and my sister, but colon cancer is dear to my heart, because I had it twice, and I lost my left kidney in my second surgery. Most people just kind of go about it that I had cancer, but they don't know the difficult time that one must go through, and that's why this campaign is so good. Let's get checked. You know, it's so good. It's the opportunity for people to think about it in these times right now, is to get yourself checked. You know, it's not costly. It's $69, and you can do it at home and get your results in a week, and at least you'll know where you're at. I think we've gotten away from wanting to know where we're at with things because of busyness and fear, and we need to get past that. And, you know, so many people find themselves, you know, not knowing that they have this problem, and it could be there. You know, you could be healthy. I was healthy and playing Major League Baseball in 98, and there I was, you know, with a tumor inside of me and running around the bases. And, you know, I knew I had blood in the stew, and I was fatigued, and I lost weight. You know, those were all signs, but I didn't know at the time. So I'm just here to try to encourage people and make them aware. You know, this campaign is really a campaign that can help you and maybe save your life.
Well, you touched on a lot there, Daryl, and you mentioned fear. And I think one of our strategies as a society is to numb ourselves out from it, right, in different ways. And we don't want to address it. We want to act like it's not there. So, you know, for you on your journey, like, how did you get the courage to, you know what, I'm not going to run from that. I'm actually going to find out what I need to do in whatever the circumstance is, and be as present and as vulnerable and as scary and as moving forward as I can, if that makes sense.
Well, I think the most important thing is you gotta really be open to listening to someone outside of yourself and outside of family members, because, you know, everybody has opinions. But I was really open to the fact to my doctors, and they really encouraged me and really helped me get through that process. And that's why it's so important when you have a campaign like this and you have a group of people that know what they're dealing with, they can help you make clear decisions, because you have to be able to be ready to make clear decisions. So if you make the wrong decision, it could be costly. And I think a lot of times we all want to have our opinions about it, but I leaned on the doctors, and it just made all the difference in my situation, because I was, like I said before, I was in such great shape, so that really helped. You know, when they cut me open, that it kept the tumor in one place. And a lot of times people are not going to be in the same kind of physical shape that I am, that I was in, and have these symptoms that I had. So you got to prepare yourself to allow yourself to listen to someone who knows what they're talking about, and don't take it lightly. Take it to heart and let them help you make the right decision.
What was the hardest part about getting through it for you?
Well, I think the hardest part was it was overcoming the fact of the trauma that your body goes through, and taking chemo for 6 months. That process was very difficult. There were a few times I just wanted to give up on that, and my doctor kept pushing me and saying, "No, you got to take it. You got to go through this period." You know, the first time when I was diagnosed with it, you know, 98, and I had the chemo, and I didn't want to take it anymore. And then it reoccurred again in 2000, because I had to get through a 5-year window, and then I ended up losing my left kidney in the second surgery. So it was really hard going through that process of taking chemo, because I remember my mom, she didn't want to take radiation no more when she had terminal breast cancer.
Yeah, and you're still on the field at that point. It's pretty amazing, Daryl. Let's switch it to not on the field, because, you know, we have the coronavirus going on right now, and it's a terrifying time for people, but people are also looking for a little entertainment and excuse to do something other than watch the news right now, at least for a little bit. If you were going to tell baseball fans to YouTube one New York Mets game and go back and see it, if they could, what would you want them to dial up, Daryl?
Well, I would probably say the 86 clinching at home against the Chicago Cubs. I think that was a remarkable time for us, a remarkable night, you know, for us to remember. Yeah, of course, we went on to win the World Series that year, but I think about us that year, and we had such a big lead in the division, and we went to Philly and St. Louis, and we lost. We got swept there, and we came home, and Doc Gooden was pitching that night against the Cubs, and it was just, the ballpark was just on fire. And remembering when we clinched, and we just remembered all the fans running on the field. I remember seeing that before in Major League Baseball, from watching television, watching games, and saying, one day I want to be a part of that. And there it was, you know, being a part of that. So I would always tell them, go back and watch that, and how the fans took over the field. And I was just happy for them, you know, because it had been so long, and they deserve it more than anything.
Yeah. Have you talked to Doc at all recently?
I talked to him all. I talked to him quite a bit, so he's doing well, and I'm happy about that.
That team, Daryl, we've talked about this before, but I can never talk about it too much. Maybe the greatest collection of talent in the history of baseball. Is that going too tall? When you're talking about Doc Gooden in his prime, when you're talking about the grit of that team, a young Daryl Strawberry hitting bombs, I mean, where do you think that team resides in baseball history?
Well, I think it sits at the top. You know, when you look at all around, you know, from Carter, Hernandez, Ray Knight, Mookie Wilson, Lenny Dykstra, Kevin Mitchell, you know, Wally Backman, and Rafael Santana, and, you know, like I said, and you look at the bench we had, and you look at the players we had, and you look at Lenny Dykstra, you look at what we were all about, the confidence that we had in ourselves, and we just believed that we could beat anybody. It didn't matter if we were down. We always looked around and said, "We're gonna win this ball game. I mean, we could be down 5-0 in the second inning. We knew we were gonna come back and win that ball game, because that's just the kind of team we had." So it was the most remarkable team that I ever played on. Yes, I played on a great '98 Yankee team too. You know, but I can't remember so many personalities like we had on that '86 team that was so fun, you know, because everybody had their own little ways about who they were and everything. But when we stepped on the field, it was all about winning.
If everybody was doing the right things off the field on that 86 team, and let's just say you all were eating kale and doing yoga three times a day, how many World Series does that Mets team win?
Well, I'm quite sure we should have, you know, won more, you know, but we wasn't doing yoga. We wasn't drinking milk. So, it was, you know, it was just a different time. You know, we were living it up, and New York loved us, and we loved our fans. We loved the Mets fans.
It's incredible, Daryl, that you're beloved by both Yankee and Met fans. I can't think of anybody who's played for both teams that has the love on both sides of town like that. Do you appreciate it? Do you feel that?
I'm forever grateful for New York City. There's no question about it. The fans are remarkable here. They have such great knowledge and understanding about sports and players. And either they like you or they don't. They've always took me in a place in their heart, and they liked me regardless of what I was going through. They just thought, you know, this guy, he's not afraid. You know, he keeps getting up, and that's what New York is all about. You know, it's about getting up. Can you get up? You know, can you stand in the middle of the pressure and perform at this level? And you know, I love that about New York City, and I'm always forever grateful for that.
What does the day-to-day look for you right now, Daryl? Are you doing your social distancing? How are you spending your time?
My day is busy. You know, my schedule is busy. I'm probably traveling maybe like 250 times out of the year. I'm ordained minister, and I'm an evangelist, and I'm in a whole different life now. And, you know, I'm just excited about, you know, where my life is, and encouraging people, you know, especially with colon cancer, because I've experienced that, and just all kind of areas of helping kids and, you know, just doing great things to bring awareness of a great project like today.
As far as like people being in church right now, how are you guys tackling that? Because it's obviously a challenge.
It's a challenge in everything. It's a challenge in not just that, not just churches, but, you know, sports arenas and, you know, jobs. You know, I mean, everybody's on the edge right now. And we just got to, you know, we got to really be patient as people. And we just got to understand that this will pass just like anything else. But we just got to be very patient because we're in a crisis now with coronavirus.
I'm assuming you have known, I know you have no knowledge about this, but are you hearing from anybody in Major League Baseball as to when the season potentially could get underway? I saw somebody talking yesterday about June 1st, which almost seems optimistic at this point.
I really don't know at this point. And like I said, they got to be concerned about the health of people and the health of people coming to the ballpark. You know, it's a major risk if you're not ready, we're not at a place where we're ready to have people come back into the ballpark. Because now we're talking about kids, you know, possibly getting sick, and you really don't want that, because that'd be very difficult and very hard to deal with if you get so many kids get sick.
Yeah, no doubt. All right, two more for you, Daryl, real quick here. Number one, if I made Daryl Strawberry commissioner of baseball and you were in charge with doing, I'm going to give you one or two things to speed up the game, make it a little bit more exciting for the youth of America to watch who always want action, what would you do, if anything?
Get rid of instant replay. It's a waste of time. You know, either you make the call and you live with it, and, you know, get rid of that, you know, to keep the game flowing instead of stopping in the middle of it. You know, I think that's just a big waste.
Okay. What about the strike zone? Would you widen it? I'd like to see a bigger strike zone, Daryl. Letters to the knees.
Well, I think it's always been a pretty big strike zone. I mean, I think they're doing well in that area. You know, I think it's probably other areas of the game, you know, that I would like to come back is, you know, you can break up a double play and you can run the catcher over, you know, because we used to do that back in our day. So they've gotten away from that, you know, and they kind of made it a little softer for, you know, you can't break up double plays and go and fly it hard, and you can't run the catcher over. He blocks the plate, I'm running him over.
So Daryl Strawberry is old school.
Yeah, I'm old school. I'm old school baseball player. So I'm not new school. I'm not used to running around and not trying to break up a double play or run the catcher over. So
yeah, I mean, if we put Daryl out there in 2020, you still want to steal a bag, right?
Oh, sure. Yeah. I mean, I probably can't steal a bag now. I can't run like I used to.
But in your prime, you could do it. We know
in
that.
In my prime, I could do it. Yeah, no question about it.
Yeah. All right, last one, Daryl. What do you on the way out here? Is there anything we need that we didn't touch on as far as colon cancer and I should say colorectal cancer You know, and where can we go for more information? You mentioned $69. It's easy to get yourself checked out, but last thing you want people to know.
Yeah, go to let's get checked.com. I think that's the most important thing. People go to the website, learn more about it, get more information about it. Check in, you know, check in before you check out. That's what I tell people. You know, it's a good thing that you have a campaign like this where you're able to check in and it's online for you and it doesn't cost you much. And don't run in fear, you know, and stop, you know, stop being too busy and make time for yourself and your health, because your health is important.
Four-time World Series, eight-time All-Star, and a Hall of Fame human being. Daryl, great to talk to you, my friend. Always good to catch up.
All right, you too, Mark. Thanks a lot.